tweet at TodaySOR.
On Fire is the new book by environmental activist Naomi Klein. Her title refers to the vast forest fires of recent years, recent weeks indeed. Many attribute the unseasonably hot and dry weather which causes the fires to climate change. Her subtitle is The Burning Case for a Green New Deal. Naomi Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Thank you for joining us from our London studio. This book about climate change and ways of mitigating its effects. Roughly how long have we got before climate change becomes irreversible, before anything we do might be futile?
So I think it's important to understand that we are already in the era of climate disruption. We are not talking about preventing it. We are talking about doing everything possible to prevent truly catastrophic outcomes. And so a year ago, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change told us that if we want to prevent those outcomes, then we need to cut global emissions in half in 12 years. And that was a year ago. So that means it's now 11. And it also means that countries that have been emitting carbon at an industrial scale for a couple of hundred years need to do it even faster, which is why we need targets to decarbonize very quickly, like 2030. So we're on a tight deadline. I'm not going to lie to you.
And the kind of commitments that have been made by governments and by international organizations, do they go anywhere near meeting that kind of reduction, emissions reduced by half in 12 years?
No, we aren't seeing the kind of targets that we need, and that's true for Ireland as well, although certainly progress has been made. The climate movement in Ireland is really strong, and there have been significant victories banning fracking, pushing fossil fuel divestment, declaring a climate emergency. But I think at the governmental level, we are still seeing in country after country this sort of approach of what's the least that we can do and still get maximum credit. And in an era where you have the Donald Trumps and the Jair Bolsonaros in Brazil kind of torching the planet with glee, it's easy to look good in comparison to them. But that doesn't make for climate leadership, because we still aren't seeing the kind of ambition that is required to meet those targets. And we need some countries to actually show what that looks like. We hope that we'll have a new government in the United States, as a result of the 2020 elections. But until that happens, we need governments that position themselves as climate leaders to actually show us what that looks like. And that really means cutting off new fossil fuel leases. It means going after new gas exploration as well as oil and coal. And we aren't seeing that yet.
You are a big admirer and supporter of Greta Thunberg, the Swedish young activist who's, if you like, blazed quite a trail over the last year or so.
Absolutely. In the book I call it On Fire, not just because of those planetary fires that you referenced earlier, but also because the climate movement is on fire, and we see that with the student strike movement that Greta kickstarted with her lonely stand outside of the Swedish Parliament, and just a few weeks ago we had 7 million people joining that climate strike around the world, by far the largest climate mobilization. As you said, I'm speaking to you from London, where the Extinction Rebellion movement is in the center of the political debate, making it clear to politicians and the media that Brexit is not the only emergency that exists. There is also the extinction emergency. There is also the emergency of the climate crisis that demands our attention and demands that we listen to science and that we have a justice-based response to this crisis. I was really struck listening to the conversation that you had earlier about the lack of funding for mental health. And, you know, we see this around the world where there is a crisis in funding for the social infrastructure that makes our communities stronger, that takes care of people, the infrastructure of care, if you will. That's actually low carbon work. One of the things I argue in my book is that we shouldn't just think of a green job as putting up a solar panel or a wind turbine. But though there are many, many good unionized jobs we can create in those sectors, it doesn't burn a lot lot of carbon to provide services to a child on the autism spectrum or to take care of the elderly. And we need to expand those sectors of care that are already low carbon and make sure that they're lower carbon by investing in public transit and other infrastructure. But we really need to transform our economy so we grow the areas that actually improves quality of life, that's low carbon, and we do need to contract the parts of our economy that are based on endless extraction.
You also write in a complimentary way about Extinction Rebellion. Now, I just want to put you a quotation from their website. It says, "We hereby declare the bonds of the social contract to be null and void, which the government has declared invalid by its continuing failure to act appropriately on climate change. We call upon every principled and peaceful citizen to rise with us." Now, what they're effectively saying is, you know, because the social contract is representative democracy, whereby citizens elect politicians of their choice to form a government, they effectively want us to ignore all that, to move away from democracy. Or am I misinterpreting it?
Well, I think what they're saying is that we don't have democracy. That a core responsibility of political leaders is to safeguard a habitable planet. I mean, that should be a baseline. We also have, you know, in the United States, there's a group of young people that are suing the United States government and fossil fuel companies for failing, for violating their constitutional right to a livable future. And so by engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience, by calling for a democratic people's assembly to come up with just responses to the climate crisis that are guided by science, I think that Extinction Rebellion is standing up for core principles of democracy class has discredited themselves by refusing to fulfill their most basic responsibilities, which is to protect the people that they represent.
But did I correctly hear you to say we don't have democracy?
Our democracies are failing.
Well, that's a different thing, because, I mean, we go and we elect governments. We're going to have elections in the UK and here, well, sometime in the next maybe 6 months or there. And you know, I mean, are you basically saying, well, look, if the wrong, quote unquote, wrong people get elected who don't do the implement the policies that you want to see implemented, well, then we can somehow ignore the fact that they're the duly elected parliament or government?
Well, the truth is that a lot of these governments who have been elected were elected promising to take climate change seriously. And that's true of the Conservatives in the UK. They're not Trumpian climate deniers. They say they support the Paris Accord, which says that we need to keep temperatures below 1.5 to 2 degrees warming Celsius, because anything above that is incompatible with a habitable planet. And yet they are blowing their own emission reduction targets, which actually would warm the planet by twice that, because they're so inadequate. So no, this isn't what politicians were elected to do.
And going back to Greta Thunberg in Sweden, she, and you quote her as saying how she learned from climate scientists that if radical action was taken now, reducing emissions by 15% a year in wealthy countries like Sweden, then it would dramatically increase the chances of a safe future for her generation and the generations that followed. But that would require massive disruption and dislocation, wouldn't it? 15% reduction a year.
Well, the subtitle of the book is The Burning Case for a Green New Deal, because the truth is that we are headed for massive change, for massive transition, one way or another. If we stay on the road we're on, it leads to, at minimum, 3 to 4 degrees Celsius of warming, which changes pretty much everything about the way we live. The kind of disruption that you're mentioning, I mean, think about what Puerto Rico has faced, what the Bahamas has faced, what communities in Northern California have faced because of wildfires. That is real disruption. And that is the kind of disruption we are all headed for if we act like we are not in crisis. We do have an alternative, but yeah, it also requires big changes. But if we manage and plan those changes thoughtfully, if we make sure that they are just, then those changes can actually benefit the majority of people. And so, you know, the idea that one of the options on the table is just continuing on as we are right now indefinitely into the future is a fantasy. And climate scientists are trying to tell us that in every way that we can. They can.
You rue the endless fragmentation of the left, and we've seen another example of it here in recent times. What can people on the left do about this?
Well, to me, this is one of the things that's really exciting about a Green New Deal framework, which is not a singular climate policy like, say, cap and trade or a carbon tax. It's really a vision for the next economy that says, okay, we need to listen to what our carbon budget actually is. We need to lower emissions with the speed that Greta is referencing, something like 15% a year. But as we change everything in how we live in buildings, how we change our building construction, how we change our transportation systems, how we change our energy systems, we have an opportunity to make them much, much fairer. We have an opportunity to create millions of well-paying unionized jobs. We have an opportunity, as I said, to invest in low-carbon sectors that are overwhelmingly dominated by women, and therefore the work is not compensated as it should be. We have an opportunity to right wrongs between our countries and make sure that poor countries who are on the front lines of climate disruption have the resources that they need to deal with the impacts of climate change and also leapfrog to clean energy over fossil fuels. And so this vision is expansive, and it is a real opportunity to bring together labor, faith leadership, of course environmentalists, but also every sector that I mentioned, health, education, and so on. Yeah.
And at an individual or micro level, what sacrifices may we have to make in our own daily lives?
Well, I think the truth is that an economy that values consumption above all else, and we live in a society that just sees any consumption as good as progress. Shopping can't be a way of life for the relatively wealthy consumers, and that's the way our societies have changed. You know, I've been writing about this for 20 years since I wrote No Logo. Shopping didn't used to be the primary pastime for our culture. There used to be other ways that we derived value and a more sustainable and lasting ways to derive well-being, time in community, time with friends and family, access to art, access to nature. So we need to invest in those areas. And yes, we are going to have to wean ourselves off the idea that we can shop forever and act as if the world's resources are infinite. As Greta said to the UN, we have to stop this fantasy, this dangerous fantasy of infinite growth on a finite planet.
Naomi Klein, thank you so much indeed for joining us. The book is called On Fire, The Burning Case for a Green New Deal. It's by Naomi Klein, published by Allen & Lane, selling for £12.99 sterling. That's probably about 15, 16 euro in euros. We'll take another quick break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.